Athletic.
Right, Reds, Tony Evans here at Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. So, Liverpool limp out of Europe, going goalless on a night when they needed three. Well, that's what went wrong in Madrid, what's left of the season, and what was Klopp doing bringing off Darwin Nunes? All that in the company of James Pearce and Andy Jones. Let's start, lads, with your three words. James.
I think I'd have to kick it off with far too timid. Do you know what? It was just unbelievably flat when you think of the drama an excitement that Liverpool have been almost synonymous with in the Champions League under Jurgen Klopp. And at times it felt like a training exercise for Real Madrid, especially in that second half. I actually thought first half was okay. But yeah, that second half, they just didn't even lay a glove on them, did they? And as you said, Tony, to emerge having failed to score in a night when you needed a minimum of three just about sums things up.
Andy, your three words.
I think I'd probably go with lacked cut and edge. As James said, I thought Liverpool were all right first half, but throughout the game, whenever they got into that final third, they just lacked any sort of real quality or conviction in what they were doing. And that on a night when you needed exactly that. And that's why I think we sat here and it felt as flat as it did in the end.
You know, at the final whistle, I just said, what was that? And they're my three little words. Oh, let's see what everyone's saying on Facebook. Nick Mann says, Real Madrid curse. Well, yeah. Ronan Horrigan said, another letdown. Matthew Brown, 12 cup finals. Well, I know we're looking for positives, but I mean, really, Matthew? Ollie Campbell, extend a break welcome. I'm not entirely sure about that myself. To get involved, just search Walk On Podcast on Facebook.
That's it, the full-time whistle. Liverpool are out. The European champions march on majestically into the quarter-finals and who knows how far beyond. But this is the end of the road for Liverpool, who couldn't recover from what happened at Anfield.
James, you're still in Madrid now. On your way back home from it all, I mean, it was really... You said timid, and that is exactly the word. When I saw the team, I thought, four forwards, two midfielders... Maybe they're just going to A-log some forwards and bomb Real Madrid. And then that happened.
Yeah, I agree. When I saw the lineup, I thought it was bold, it was attacking, it felt like the right thing to do in the circumstances when obviously with Jordan Henderson missing due to illness and Bešetić injured, you know, his midfield options were so limited. And to have any chance, you know, they had, I think Klopp said they had to be close to perfect, and it was just a million miles off that, wasn't it? It was, and the thing is, yes, Real Madrid are an absolute class act and Liverpool don't have to come up against them, players of that caliber every week, but the failings were kind of painfully familiar in terms of so many away games this season, in terms of not being clinical enough, not taking their chances, and then having failed to get the breakthrough, seemed to lose heart. And I think that was the biggest thing for me, is that I don't think that they ever looked like a team last night who believed they could pull that off.
The lack of belief is absolutely staggering, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's probably the most striking thing for me coming away from the game was, you know, I expected Liverpool to at least have a 10, 15 minute period where they gave Real Madrid something to think about, where suddenly there was a bit of pressure. So where, you know, you thought, hang on a minute, because to pull it off would have been up there with Liverpool's greatest ever achievements in Europe. You know, there's no disgrace in losing narrowly to Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. Of course, the vast majority of the damage was done at Anfield 3 weeks earlier, but I did expect them to at least have them worried slightly. But the Real Madrid fans around me, I mean, the atmosphere was pretty dead in there, to be honest, because I think they just sat there with the feet up thinking, well, we're just watching Real Madrid absolutely cruise into the quarterfinals of the Champions League. So it was probably in keeping with where Liverpool are at, because when you go back to, you know, the same scoreline, wasn't it, as in Paris in the final last May, yet you came away from that thinking, how did Liverpool not just lift the European Cup? They were better than Real Madrid for long periods. Courtois had the game of his life. Yet I came away from the Bernabeu on Wednesday night thinking how far have Liverpool fallen? Because, you know, there is a gulf there. The painful reality is that they're no longer a serious threat to Real Madrid on the European stage, not this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You look at the stats from the match. Real Madrid had 17 shots and Liverpool had 9. Real Madrid had 8 on target, Liverpool 5. And as for big chances, well, the home side had 4 and Liverpool had a grand total of none when they needed to score at least 3. Andy, you did a piece about Chelsea going there and nearly turning a Real Madrid lead over and basically how to do it. And Jürgen obviously never read it.
Yeah, it was one of them, wasn't it? I think in a weird way, and it, obviously there was much more to the performance, but I think the early chance they get when Salah, you know, nicks it off Madrid and then plays Nunes through and his shot is, you know, it's a bit tame when you look at it and watch it back. It sort of set a tone for Liverpool's attack and play from that point onwards, because it took me back a little bit to Barca and Liverpool. Barca make a bit of a mistake in possession and Liverpool take advantage of it straight away, really early, get that first goal and it changes the whole outlook of the game. Whereas on this occasion, Liverpool nearly take advantage of a bit of a mistake towards, you know, near their own goal from Real Madrid, but don't score. And it just sort of set the tone of their attacking performance from that point onwards. And then you sort of see the stats. And I thought they would, you know, they looked a little bit more threatening towards the end of the first half, but without ever, you know, it wasn't like Real Madrid were panicking and, you know, all over the shop. And, you know, it was shots being fired in and Courtois making great saves. It makes a good save from Nunes, doesn't he, with that curling effort that might be creeping in. But other than that, you're sort of looking at moments where you think, oh, this is an opportunity or an opening, but in the end, Liverpool either make the wrong pass, the pass that's played is not very good, or the shot itself has come from an area where you're probably not going to be Thibaut Courtois. So that was a frustrating element, wasn't it? But I do feel that sort of fit, like, and this isn't to blame Nunes at all, but, you know, if you hit that shot with more conviction, if you scored that, and it wasn't an easy chance by any means, you might have that different outlook and give everyone a lift. But I think as the game goes on and you've still got that 3-0 margin that you've got to somehow figure a way out, you know, to score 3 goals and you know, the time's ticking away, you could sort of see that hope draining from the players in front of your eyes. And you can sort of understand it in a way because it was pitched as the impossible task. But yeah, I think that was the problem. And Liverpool never got that. Whereas Chelsea stayed in the game, and then eventually, you know, got, you know, nicked the goal and were able to exploit Real Madrid and make it a little bit more, you know, bit of tension in the air, if you like. Liverpool never got that first step, and that's the problem.
No, there was never any sense of jeopardy, was there, for Real Madrid? And what concerns me, James, and really does bother me, is that Klopp has never struck me as a tactician, you know, for all the heavy metal football thing. This, you know, it evolved sort of naturally as the fullbacks developed the system of playing. And so you're not going there with a tactical plan to destroy them. You know, Klopp's all about belief and he's all, you know, giving energy to the team and all that. And it doesn't seem to be working. He doesn't seem to be able to transmit that part of his character, that vital part of his character to this team at this point.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I think, I don't think it's a case of them not wanting to do it. I just don't think they can do it where they're at now as a squad. I think even, you know, that second half last night was, for me, the perfect example of it, where I think he would have been, Klopp, not over the moon, but also not particularly demoralised by what he'd seen in the first half. It was, I think he would have known that if Liverpool had scored early in the second half, then suddenly there would have been a glimmer of hope. But it was, I think that's the thing, whatever was said in that dressing room just didn't seem to resonate and get through, because there was no spark. There was no kind of real big collective push. It was just so, so flat. That was the...
It's almost like half-time sucked out what little life there was in them in the first half.
Yeah. And I think you'd also have to say his substitutions actually, you know, made Liverpool.
Well, we'll get on to that. We'll get on to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Yes, we'll get on to those substitutions.
Walk On.
Tony Evans here with James Pearce and Andy Jones with Walk On from The Athletic. And it's a kind of one of those days, isn't it, when you reflect on a game, and so often with Jurgen Klopp's teams, we have bounced up the next morning. We've been excited. And today it's like, oh, after that performance at Real Madrid. I mean, Andy, you need three goals in the Bernabeu, and Alisson's your best player. And it's not like Real Madrid had them under siege, you know, in that sense. That Real Madrid were just taking it easy. They were cruising. They were conserving their energy.
Yeah, it is. I think that there was always an element of Liverpool were going to need Alisson and the defence, but mainly Alisson, to have a bit of a blinder. Because we referenced the Barcelona game, and Alisson, you know, needed to pull up big saves in that game as well. So there was always an element of it, if Liverpool were going to open up, and when you see the system and the team Klopp selects, you knew that there were going to be opportunities for Real Madrid on the counter-attack. But fair play to Alisson, because, you know, the two saves in the first half especially are absolutely magnificent. I mean, I don't quite know how he saves that Vinicius Jr. one from a yard out. And then the Camavinga from long range that he tips onto the bar is, you know, is just equally as good. But I think there was always an element that Liverpool were going to need Alisson to make big saves. But equally, you don't want to be talking about him being the standout and the only standout. You would hope that, you know, a couple of the attackers would have, you know, put the name down for a man of the match type performance as well. It's one of them, isn't it? I think Klopp, in a way, I was fine with the setup, and I think the setup was right. And I think it showed in the first half. But I think what also didn't help is that Madrid, as you say, we're sort of cruising, but also they stamped an authority on, I thought, in that first sort of 20, 25 minutes where they created a lot of chances, or not loads, but, you know, really good, you know, good openings at times, which I think also spooked Liverpool, because suddenly you're then thinking, well, if these keep doing this, they're going to score eventually. And then our task is, the impossible becomes even more impossible. So I think Madrid were quite clever in that they didn't just sit in and go, well, Liverpool, you have the ball, what are you going to do? And I think at the end of the day, you have to remember that it is Real Madrid. They are the champions of Europe. They are incredible in the Champions League. As frustrating as Liverpool's performance was, you do have to commend Real Madrid for how well they managed the game.
Yeah, the thing is, though, I mean, you know, yes, it is Real Madrid, and but we can't just dismiss it and say, oh, it was Real Madrid, you know, what are you going to do? You know, if you're going to play with the big boys, which Liverpool have since, what, 2017, you know, when 2018, when things changed around, if you're going to play with the big boys, play with them. I mean, I can see the logic of playing the front four, Darwin, Gakpo, Jota and Salah, and when I saw the team, I went, yeah, all right, yeah, like I said before, you know, ail out of forward, you know, agricultural, just get it into the box and put them under pressure. But then the other thought I had was, well, shouldn't one of them at least be held back in the second half if Madrid start to tire? I mean, what, Modric is, what, 86 or something? You know, if they ran them into the ground, you know, maybe there'd be scope for fresh legs coming on. But instead, you know, the bench was, well, Ox coming on, you think to yourself, God love him, you know, he's never been the same since his injury, and you always want the best for him. But when he's coming on and Nunes coming off, and the bench, I know they've got injuries, but the bench looked really short. It didn't seem that Klopp deployed his resources in the best way, James.
Certainly the substitutions had an adverse effect, you know, on the performance. I think, like I said before, I actually thought that I was pleased with the starting lineup he picked. I thought it was bold. I thought it was on a night Liverpool had to take risks. For me, it was the right thing to do. You're right. It did mean that he probably didn't have that game changer on the bench to bring on. But then on a night when you needed three goals, I think he was relying on them trying to knock into that deficit, you know, in the opening hour before he changed things. And yeah, I mean, I know Nunes wasn't, you know, at his absolute best, was he? But he was still providing, you know, one of the real rare kind of threats that Liverpool had. And I just think, you know, when you need a minimum of three to take off your kind of £80 million striker, for me was a strange move. I thought Jota going off made more sense because, as Klopp said himself, you know, he's not long back after a really serious injury. But yeah, bringing on Harvey Elliott and Roberto Firmino, it just became even more disjointed. And it's no criticism of Oxlade-Chamberlain, because, you know, what chance did he really have? When we're talking about someone who's played, I look back, he played 5 minutes of football since the middle of January. If you want something to graphically illustrate the difference in levels between where Liverpool and Real Madrid are currently, you look at Ancelotti brings on, you know, £80 million France international Tchouaméni, who obviously Liverpool were desperate to sign last summer, and Klopp turns to Oxlade-Chamberlain with 20 minutes left. You know, and the whole midfield department, I think it just kind of again showed why there is this complete rebuild of that department on the horizon this summer. I actually thought James Milner was typically like combative, and I certainly wouldn't be critical of him, but I would also say, you know, at the start of the season, you know, the idea that you'd be relying on 37-year-old James Milner to start a Champions League knockout tie would have been ridiculous. So would it have been ridiculous to think that Liverpool would really miss a teenager in Stefan Bacetic as much as they did, and of course Jordan Henderson and Thiago absent as well. But that was the kind of real golfing class that was, in truth, was there for most of the night. But it actually got worse with the substitutions.
Andy, do you know what Spanish is for "Can we play you every week"? I mean, because, you know, let's face it, they're knocked out by them the third successive season. Four times in six seasons going back to Kiev. Benzema, I mean, he scores like four or five every time he plays us, doesn't he? Or does it just feel like that? They really have been a huge stumbling block. And Ancelotti, well, he won't ever have to think about Istanbul again, was he? You know, he's had his revenge.
Yeah, he's been having it for a few years now, hasn't he? And even you go back to his Napoli teams, they always gave Liverpool a really, really difficult game. But yeah, they've got this thing over Liverpool at the moment, don't they? And Liverpool haven't necessarily played them. I mean, you would say Paris was the only time, really, that it's sort of been, you know, Liverpool haven't had significant issues, whether that be during the game. You know, you go back to Kiev with, you know, Karius and Salah's injury, which changes the complete complexion of the game. But Nat Phillips and Ozan Kabak as a defensive pairing was never really giving you much confidence in that COVID season. And then this season, it's just more Liverpool's regression. But yeah, Liverpool have just, we are sick of them, aren't we? It's really annoying at this point. It feels like if Liverpool had just avoided them, you know, in the last 16 tie, we might be looking at this Champions League campaign a little bit differently. But no, of course, they would come along and ruin it all, as they have done on a number of occasions in recent years.
Yeah. What was the mood like, James? What was Klopp's demeanour afterwards? And what was the feeling in the mix zone?
Do you know what? I was kind of darting between the two different places in the bowels of the Bernabeu. And Klopp seemed kind of like he was very much kind of accepting and I think at ease with what had gone on. I think he described it himself as, he said, "I'm not angry." He said, "I probably would be angry if it had been closer, or if we'd been, you know, undone by, you know, an unjust decision or something, you know, real fine margins." But you know, I think the reality is he had a long time during that game to come to terms with the fact that Liverpool were going out of the Champions League. And
isn't that a bit worrying if he's like, I mean, some of us have seen him in press conferences, and he does, under that smiley exterior, you know, there's a radioactive core of anger. You know, if he's sitting there and going, "Oh, you know, what are you going to do?" That worries me. I mean, you know, he should be, I mean, I'm not saying point the fingers at all, Hans, but like, just express your frustration. It seems, he seems to have been a bit meek by his standards.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was probably more to do with the fact that he knew that really the tie had effectively gone 3 weeks earlier. I think that was probably more it, in terms of the frustration was more of the dreadful mistakes that Liverpool had made, in, you know, in somehow turning that commanding 2-0 early lead into a 5-2 defeat and the heaviest ever home European setback in their history. I think, to me, sat there listening to him, it was more, we haven't lost the tie here tonight, effectively. I know, obviously, they lost the game, but it wasn't like a real disgrace of a performance. And also, I think it feeds back into what we talked about earlier in terms of, I think he knew he couldn't question the application. I just don't think they've either got it in their legs or got it in their heads in terms of that belief and drive that you need to pull off the impossible. And as for the players, yeah, I spoke to Van Dijk and similar really in terms of, you know, obviously talked about how devastated he was to go out, but held his hands up and said, you know, the better team have gone through over the two games. And I think that's probably why, you know, it does have a different feel to it, doesn't it? If you feel like, you know, like Paris, when you come away thinking, you know, a European Cup just slipped through Liverpool's grasp compared to over the 120 minutes of that tie. I mean, Liverpool were the second best for probably 20 minutes, 25 minutes out of that 180 minutes. So it was kind of, yeah, more, I'd say more to kind of just kind of downright disappointment than anger, I think.
I think there's a reality to it as well, isn't there? I mean, probably from the players have lived through this season, they knew that this was a task that was going to be very, very difficult. Whereas I think there would have been more anger if, say, Liverpool had played Real Madrid in the Champions League last 16 last season and put in the two displays that they have. But I think there is an element of reality of where Liverpool are at. And I know that's not necessarily a good thing, but equally, I think that's why you would probably say there's not the anger, and it might be internally. There might be, you know, things that need to be said behind closed doors, if you like. But I think that, as well, given the first leg, I think everyone knew what was likely to happen. You never know. And I think Klopp also sort of admitted it, didn't he, after that first leg, when he sort of said, when I think about it at the moment, there's no chance that we're going through the ties effectively over. So I think that's probably why there was that air about Klopp and the players, you would imagine, because there's that type of reality. And I think they weren't helped by, you know, Henderson and by Chesters being out, because we call Klopp's selection bold, but I don't know whether he would have necessarily gone that way if he'd had those two available. And that might have made the bench situation a little bit different and stuff like that. But, you know, I think that it was just the reality of where Liverpool are now. And I think people have realised that Real Madrid, we're the better team over the two legs, and you can't really be massively angry about that, other than knowing, you know, it should light a fire under everyone that this can't suddenly be our level, if you like. We need to get back up to where we were.
I'm hoping that, on reflection, the morning after the game, they'll go away. And they should be angry, because, after all, they were 2-0 up after 15 minutes of the first leg of the tie. Let's not forget that. This tie was there. It was there to be taken. Real Madrid were on the rack. And for whatever reason, and we know there's a ton of reasons, they let that slip. And, you know, the worst cliche in football is 2-0 is a dangerous lead to have. But it shouldn't be. It should be the basis for closing the game down. And there are loads of things this Liverpool team are incapable of doing. And beating Real Madrid seems to be one of them. on the final point, they played You'll Never Walk Alone at the end, in respect for Real Madrid's honorary president, Amancio Amaro, who died before the first leg at Anfield, but just felt like a bit like, well, you know, it's, I know you can't criticise them for paying respect, and, you know, there should be some sort of solidarity between the clubs after Paris, but it did feel a little bit like, how should we put it, taking the me, or was that me? How did it feel in the stadium, James?
Yeah, I must admit, initially, my initial reaction was, it, you know, almost to think it was a bit condescending. But then when I was then told by our Spanish friends that it was a thank you for Liverpool laying flowers in front of the away end before the first leg in memory of their honorary president, you thought, okay, well, that, you know, that is slightly different. And as you said, there is the solidarity between the two sets of fans after the horrific things they went through in Paris. I think what I would say is, it's much easier to make gestures like that when you've been that superior. I would have been, in a parallel universe where Liverpool won that game 4-0, does You Never Walk Alone still get played at the final whistle? I'm not completely convinced. But when you see like the Real Madrid fans applauding the 1,800 strong travelling cop and then returning it, you know, it's the way it should be, really, isn't it? Between two absolute, you know, giants of the European game. So yeah, I had kind of mixed feelings on it, but yeah, once I found out the background to it, I was like, okay, yeah, well, it was, I think you've got to say it's nice, but like we said, it's easier to make gestures like that when you're looking down from quite a height in terms of the difference between the teams.
Yeah, and talking of gestures, Seferin apologised to both sets of fans for Paris, finally, like it matters. Yes, but earlier on in the week, we saw a similar situation to Paris in Porto, where the Inter fans were put into a really dangerous situation. So, you know what? UEFA's apologies are hollow. They mean nothing, because football fans are still put in dangerous situations on a regular basis, and the governing body do very little to stop it, to alleviate it. This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic. This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic, with me, Tony Evans, James Pearce and Andy Jones. So, here we are, mid-March, and we're out of everything except the battle for fourth place. And that's some fall, because, like, this time last year, we were on one of the greatest rides in the history of Liverpool Football Club, nay, the game. Andy, I mean, it feels a bit flat, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And also, for me, the worst thing is an extended break now. We've got international football. We've got to watch England.
Yeah, I don't know whether the break does help Liverpool or not at the moment. I guess there's an element of, does it give them a little bit of a chance to have a reset ahead of, you know, the final stretch? But then a lot of their players will be going away on international duty. So there's not like, it's not suddenly 2 weeks of time to do loads of work on the training pitch, really, because there's probably not going to be that many of them there. What it will help is the likes of Thiago and Luis Diaz will be able to step up their recovery and their rehabilitation to hopefully be, you know, as close to full fitness by the time we return. But then equally, when you look at Liverpool's next three, of City, Chelsea and Arsenal, maybe it's good that we don't have to face that prospect for 2.5 weeks. But you mentioned this before about, you know, how Liverpool have fallen really in terms of that. Look where we were last season to now. It's a big shame in a sense, because, you know, this, you know, it was such an unbelievable time, wasn't it? That, you know, 12 months ago, when one cup was already in the bag, I think, by this point, and, you know, there was three still very much on the cards. And now you look at it and the top four trophy is the only thing Liverpool can get. And even that's not a guarantee. And they've got a lot of work to do to get to that. So it might give them a bit of chance to reset in a sense, but equally, you just hope it doesn't have any adverse effects on everyone. And you certainly hope that no one goes away on international duty, which, I mean, and gets injured, which would be very Liverpool this season if about three of them come back and, you know, picked up injuries to keep him out for a month
it
or so.
It would be. And you know what? The world's mocking us, fate's mocking us, because the next game is Manchester City on April Fool's Day. James, I mean, 12 games left to rescue this season. Can they do it? Is there a pathway that's clear now to just take something away from this season and to go into next season with positives and the chance to have another tilt at Real Madrid?
Yeah, I think they can do it. It feels a long way off at the minute on the back of that dismal defeat at Bournemouth, because, you know, they, let's not forget, they had really fought their way back into contention. You know, if you, what was it, 13 points out of 15 before that, before shooting themselves in the foot on the South Coast. And as daunting as it does look, that opening week in April, when, you know, as you said, they go to the Etihad, then they go to Stamford Bridge, and then it's Arsenal at home. You know, it is actually the bigger games against the domestic rivals that have tended to bring out the best in Liverpool this season. You know, of course, they beat City at Anfield. Unfortunate to lose to Arsenal at the Emirates. And, you know, Chelsea at home was during a period when, you know, both clubs were in a bit of a mess and it was a pretty dour stalemate. So, yeah, I think Liverpool are probably going to need 9, maybe 10 wins from the last 12, which is a big ask, but they're capable of doing it. I mean, it did, you know, you think back to 2 years ago when they salvaged that top four spot with, you know, effectively with Nat Phillips and Reece Williams playing at centre-half, and it just has this group got it in them before the next step in the evolution of this squad, because there are some big names who are preparing to move on. Have they got it in them to produce kind of one last hurrah? Because that's what Klopp needs to try and summon from them. In a way, having 17 days sounds, you know, quite impressive, doesn't it, in terms of, like, you know, being able to take a step back and assess things and get them ready for it. But, you know, the reality is so different with players jetting off all around the world. Klopp has, he's given his non-international players next week off, because I think there's always a feeling that what can you really do with such a small group in the first week of an international break? And then they'll regroup at Kirby in that second week to have a full week building up to City. But obviously players will be coming back at different times that week. So, yeah, I think it's more probably a bit of breathing space for the manager and his coaching staff to try and assess, you know, where they do go from here in terms of, I think that, you know, it's already clear what needs to be done in the summer. Probably what's less clear is how you use the resources you've already got to try and get a top four finish. Because as we've talked about previously, you know, it will have a knock-on effect if they fall short. And it, obviously in the background, you've got FSG's ongoing search for new investment that still waiting for some positive news on that in terms of what that could generate. So, yeah, and you know, aside from the finances, just from a purely prestige perspective, you know, it would be embarrassing to drop out of Europa League. Six successive Champions League campaigns under Klopp, three finals, two last 16 exits now, and one quarter final exit. The idea of Liverpool dropping into the Europa League, you know, fills me with a fair bit of dread.
No, it'd be awful, be awful. And 6 points behind Tottenham with a game in hand. But more worrying is Brighton, who beat Palace on Wednesday night, a level with us on 42 points, and they've got a game in hand, and it kind of tells you where we are. Andy, it seems at the moment, and it might just be me being overly negative, but the top four seems a bit of a stretch at the moment.
It does after the Bournemouth game, because I think that's why that one felt so important to them, because I think if Liverpool had won that, you look at it, you view it, the situation much differently, don't you? But when you take a step back and you see Liverpool's first three games, you see that the teams around them are, you know, Brighton especially are just in great form at the moment, aren't they? Tottenham look like, even though they seem like they're in crisis every other week, they're still churning out the results that they need to. And then you can't rule out Newcastle either, who, you know, we know, you know, the dip in form is well documented, but that doesn't guarantee that it's going to continue. So I think, and then when you look at Liverpool's first three, and you just wish that they had sort of a couple of games where you could go, yeah, you can pick up 6 points there, start to build momentum. But instead, you're probably likely to find yourself a bit further away from. I mean, listen, as we said, this, you know, these are the games that have probably suited Liverpool more this season. But, you know, that doesn't guarantee they're going to win them. And, you know, there's a chance that the gap increases potentially. It does feel, following that Bournemouth game, it feels a lot harder than it did after United. Without a doubt, where I think there was a beginning to have a confidence with that 4 wins in 5, 13 points from 15, 5 clean sheets on the bounce. It was like, here we go. This is Liverpool starting to get on that run, that momentum to push themselves, you know, ahead of the rest, really. But that Bournemouth, that's why the Bournemouth defeat felt like such a setback, because it was like, right, well, how many more times are Liverpool going to have this type of performance, and how, given they're already catching up, how many more times can they afford to have that type of performance? Not many.
Exactly.
They're not just facing one team either. They're against three or four others who are looking to get into that top four as well. So that makes it even more difficult.
You have to say that, you know, if you're looking for positives, you know, Diaz's comeback is going to lift everyone, because, you know, as bad as Liverpool have been for most of this season, you know, they've also had some, you know, horrendous misfortune with injuries, and, you know, the fact that someone as gifted as Luis Diaz hasn't kicked a ball since October is another reason why they find themselves in their current plight. So Diaz should be back up to, you know, certainly, you know, a couple of full weeks since he's been able to return to squad training by then, you'd like to think. So, you know, certainly maybe not to start the game against City, but, you know, we talk about not really having great options off the bench last night. Well, that should be a different story at the Etihad. And yeah, I still think, do you know what? You know, it feels like all doom and gloom at the minute, but we have been here before. You know, I think 2 years ago is a decent reference point in terms of salvaging something from a season when all looks lost. And that's the challenge now for Liverpool. It's not the prize that they wanted to be playing for at the back end of the season. It's not the prize that any of us expected them to only have to play for, but it's what they've been dealt. And now that Now they just have to ensure that, you know, that they do get that out of this season. And then that makes the kind of the squad changes and the overhaul that's going to take place this summer will be a lot more straightforward in terms of what needs to be done if they are still a Champions League club.
Someone once said to me, in fact, a number of people have said to me over the years, that one of the greatest abilities in sport is the ability to forget, to put your mistakes and put your defeats behind you and continue and play to your highest level. So you know what? We're going to forget this. We're going to put it all behind us. We're going to be pretend it doesn't happen. And we'll be back on Monday. That's all from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James and Andy and you for listening in. To get involved in our Walk On group on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcasts, and we'll see you on Monday. Andy, do you know what Spanish is for "Can we play you every week"?
The Athletic.